And now let's continue with another of our conversations with congressional candidates ahead of the 2018 midterm elections. That's just 12 days away. Remember, you can vote early as well. My colleague Clay Masters recently spoke with 3rd District Libertarian candidate Brian Jack Holder. He began by asking Holder why he's running.
So, first of all, I'm just curious, why are you running for this?
Yeah. I got involved in politics, local Republican politics, about 5 years ago, started going to central committee meetings, and I sort of saw that there's a need for other voices, to advocate for liberty, even within the Republican Party. I tried to run in the primary with David Young a couple of times, but you've got to get 2,000 signatures in 8 of the 16 counties, and as a person that sort of takes pride in getting all the signatures himself, that's about a 2-year process just to get ballot access in the primary. So I left the Republicans a couple years ago, joined the Libertarians and helped them, Gary Johnson, get us major party status. The party gave me their nomination 2 years ago, and now we're major party, official party under state law, and we got to have a primary this spring. And I didn't want to win an uncontested primary. But, that's just the way it was. But I'm going to do it again in 2 years, and I want some friends to run with me just to be an advocate.
So how much of this, for libertarians across the state, when I interviewed the gubernatorial candidate, Jake Porter, he said a lot of this was just to influence the governor's race. Is this a way for you to influence the congressional race? And how much of it is that versus actually winning?
Well, it is. I haven't taken any campaign contributions, so I understand that David or Cindy are going to win this race. But, I would like to help the party out. Be an advocate for issues you don't hear the other candidates discussing. And it's interesting. I've heard David and Cindy use some of my phraseology in the debate we had in KMA a couple weeks ago. And even last week at public television, David and Cindy both talked about the cost of health care and the fact we need some price transparency in the market so that as consumers we can make an informed decision before we hire doctors and health care providers. So, if I can influence the discourse in a positive way, that's what I'm trying to do.
So you think you've been successful at this point?
I think so, yes. I've probably spent about $700 or $800 of my own money over the last year to campaign. And, we'll have the election results here in a few weeks. And I've got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping for at least 5%. If I get more than that, that's wonderful. But, it's not about me. It's about advocating other issues you don't hear the candidates discussing and trying to help build a party. The difficulty with the Republican and Democratic parties is that, it's sort of not good for the party to engage in inter-party fighting and arguing about issues. As a libertarian, I don't have to argue with anything when I am out there campaigning or discussing issues with my fellow party members. So.
And certainly, just like in the Republican and Democratic Party, candidates running for office have different positions. We think of moderates within the Democratic or the Republican Party versus one side to the other. As far as the definition of what you see as the Libertarian Party versus what you are as a candidate, kind of how do you fall on the spectrum? It feels like we're kind of inventing the wheel here first to talk about the Libertarian Party because it's not discussed so much, but then also narrowing in on where you stand.
Yeah, I consider myself a reasonable, rational, moderate person. I discovered 4 years ago that we've been underrepresented at the federal level for over 100 years. They capped the size of the U.S. House at 435 when there were 90 million Americans. Now there's 320 million Americans. We still have those 435 seats. And Iowa lost a congressional district after the 2010 census. Well, now we're down to 4 districts. We may lose another one after the 2020 census, and definitely we'll lose another seat after the 2030 census. So I call it the Iowa Compromise, that we divide these congressional districts into 3 smaller districts. We can divide the salary of our congressperson, divide the staff, and divide that $1 million staff budget. So the government's not going to grow, but we're going to have a better form of representative government. That's my advocacy. And I don't hear other libertarians in other congressional races across the country discussing about dividing the districts. And I think that's part of the reason why our party has not had success winning a seat in the U.S. House is because that, they're running for a seat to try and gain power to, get the liberty agenda advocated for. But, You know, that's never going to happen when these districts have 750,000 people in it. And you see that, you know, our congressperson receives, I think, $174,000 salary, yet their campaigns are spending upwards of $10 million, both candidates, to win a seat that is $174,000. I think that demonstrates that why there's some fiscal insanity in our government. If they're from a cost-benefit analysis, you don't spend that much money to get a job.
So what did you find appealing about the Libertarian Party, and how do you define it? Because I'm sure you get a lot of people just flat out asking what it is.
I think at the heart of every American is a libertarian. You know, it's the right to be left alone, the right to self-ownership, self-determination, you know, and that you don't use force, fraud, or coercion as a means to a political end. You know, it's better to convince people of a sound government policy than to coerce them with the force of government. So, you know, more of us need to get involved, run for offices at all levels. And we have the party infrastructure we're building now. And if people don't feel that their interests are represented by the Republicans and Democrats, they are welcome in the Libertarian Party.
When you've been speaking with people in the 3rd District, what are you hearing as the most important issue to them?
For most of the people I talk with, you know, the economy is what concerns them the most. They see that there's been, you know, a bubble, credit bubbles out there, and they're concerned about the tariffs and the trade war that's going on with China. You know, they're worried about a recession occurring. And for some of us in certain sectors of the economy, the recession of 2008 never ended. You know, we see that wages have stagnated. People's personal indebtedness, you know, to banks, credit cards has increased. The wages have not kept up. And then there's other people that have lost their jobs to automation, to robots, to software applications. So, you know, if you don't have a job, you can't pay your bills, and your standard of living is decreased. So we've got to do everything we can to bring all the stakeholders in the policymaking process to the table.
So when I asked that question to Congressman Young about what are people talking about, he had mentioned the economy and had a little different slant on how the economy is doing.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think things are being painted inaccurately by the president and by members of Congress from the Republican Party?
Well, I think both political parties, the Republicans and Democrats, if things appear good from the outside, they want to definitely take credit for it. And then when things don't go so well, they want to blame their predecessors when they were in power. You know, but it's different, you know, here in Iowa, in my community in Council Bluffs, looking at the economy versus what Congressman Young sees out in Washington. You know, it's difficult when you're just an average person trying to get by. You know, I've met a lot of people. I'm going to be 46 here in a month or so. And there's a lot of guys my age from Generation X that have to have two or three jobs, you know, the gig economy, just to try and squeeze by. And that takes time away from your family, you know, from your loved ones. And it's not conducive to living the standard of living that most of us want to have if we want to achieve that American dream.
And what has your position been on the tariffs that have been imposed and the impact that's having on people in the 3rd District?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's very wise to start a trade war, you know, and I know the Republicans and Democrats, you know, they have trouble with China, with them stealing our technology, all of the copyright infringements, the hacking and all of that stuff that goes on. But, you know, I would hope we would have better relations with China since we sent Governor Branstad there as our ambassador. So, you know, if they can work on him having more of an influence with the Chinese, you know, it's not good to be engaged in these trade wars, because trade wars lead to real wars eventually throughout history. So.
And you've run for this office, you said, one other time.
This is my 3rd time.
No, this is your 3rd time.
This is my 3rd time.
My apologies.
Oh, it's okay.
Do you notice anything different as you're out campaigning? And is your campaign schedule, what does it look like when I know that you don't have the kind of funds that the Democratic and the Republican opponents do?
You know, I've learned so much each time I've run. The very first time 4 years ago, I was unaffiliated with any party. I ran branded myself as a Liberty Independent. And then 2 years ago as the Libertarian candidate. But, you know, having an actual party organization, you get to participate in more forums. you know, I got invited to my first debate, and it's the third time I've run, and that was wonderful to have that opportunity. There's still one more. I don't call it a glass ceiling. It's more of a cash ceiling with Iowa Public Television. I'd like to be involved in a debate with them in 2 years, because I've been excluded twice now just because I haven't received $50,000 in campaign contributions. So I'm trying to demonstrate that any one of us can run for Congress like I have as an individual. You may not win, but, you know, you get a larger soapbox. And speaking of the soapbox, I've gotten to speak at the state fair now 3 times. And so, you know, it's wonderful. I'm expanding my social network, meeting more people. And one way that I communicate with people is I work as a citizen journalist, photographer, videographer. And so I share all the content. I film town halls, public meetings. I filmed the coronation of the queens at West Fair this summer and several parades. And I put this content online. And so people know about my candidacy through watching the videos I create. And I think it's a better way than creating a 30-second smear ad. You know, I'm going to be glad when the campaign is over in a few weeks and I can go back to watching the Rolling Stones on YouTube and not see, you know, my fellow candidates throwing haymakers at each other. So,
and some of the issues, let's dive into them. One, immigration. There's a lot of talk about this. Guest worker programs. A lot of talk about a wall on the southern border. Child-family separation. When you look at immigration, what do you see as the most important issue and thing to tackle as a member of Congress?
Yeah. What I think is most important is that whatever policy that is implemented benefits American citizens first. You know, our government exists to protect our life, liberty, and our pursuit of happiness. And so whatever is done needs to benefit Americans here first. You know, but whatever is done, due process must be followed. These people that are here illegally, they have due process rights according to our Constitution, too. So, but, you know, one thing I didn't mention at the beginning, and I've said this in other interviews, but I do not believe in unilateral decision making by our elected representatives. You know, I think it's too much responsibility to put on one person's shoulder like Congressman Young to make decisions for 760,000 of us. So, you know, I think more of us should get involved. One idea that I've had is to have everybody vote every day, you know, have some kind of application so people can say yes or no, whether they want or do not want the bill proposed in Congress. And that way, it'll stimulate the civil conversation between citizens. You know, everybody signs up. We vote on Election Day. I'd like us to get a chance to express our opinion every day that Congress is in session.
Americans already have a hard time going to the voting booth.
Oh, I know. Yeah. You know, we could do it through an application, you know, and I don't know. I don't have any Silicon Valley people backing my ideas, but I think it's something that can be done. You know, you can register to vote online with our Secretary of State. Why can't they take a poll from all of us citizens every day? And then also, you know, our elected representatives, you know, the Board of Supervisors, the mayors, our state House reps, state Senate reps that are in the 3rd District. I want to count their vote, too. I would like them to go on record whether they approve or disapprove of what's going on in Washington. And that idea sort of gets back to the 17th Amendment with the direct election of senators that, you know, the state legislature used to send our U.S. senators to Washington. Well, this way, the state representatives have a say in what goes on in Washington. I can't imagine being Senator Ernst or Senator Grassley. It's almost like a gubernatorial position because they're making decisions for all 3 million Iowans. So,
another issue that's being talked a lot about during this election season is the matter of health care. Of course, in the state, we talk a lot about the way that Medicaid is managed, but at the federal level, we've seen some dismantling of the Affordable Care Act. There was the AHCA that was eventually failed in Congress. What do you think should be done to work towards any kind of progress on health care in the country?
Yeah, the first thing is that we've got to have transparency in the prices for medical services. I know this as somebody that has had 3 back surgeries. My first 2 were covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield when I was in college, but I had another one in 2003 that I had to pay for out of my pocket. And I had no idea what going into the surgery, what it was going to cost. You know, the doctor was nice enough to perform it. The hospital was nice enough. But, you know, I got a bill for about $26,000 after the fact. And I would still go to the same doctor. But, you know, if we have a regular medical procedure, something that's fairly standardized, that you can sort of shop around and see which providers are providing it, you know, 5, 10, 15% less than other ones. That's one way to save on it. You know, the other thing is the insurance system in our country, the way that it works is that your insurance was tied to your job, which it is for most of us now. So, you know, we need to discuss the fact, should that be something that's portable from one job to another? You know, there's health savings accounts. There's some doctors that are taking cash. So there's some creative ideas out there to try and lower the costs. But like I said, this is something that all of us need to get involved in. You know, what works here in Des Moines may not work for the people in a small town where there's fewer providers and whatever local doctor there is sort of has a monopoly. So
recently there have been figures that show that the federal deficit is ballooning. We had Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell recently talking about that this is an impact from Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Wasn't quick to point to the Republican tax plan that came forward earlier this year. How do you analyze the overall deficit, the budget, and what are some steps that you think could be done to help rein that in?
Yeah. The trouble with our budget, our deficit, the national debt really concerns me is the $21 trillion. You know, the first time I ran 4 years ago, it was only $17 trillion. So it's gone up $4 trillion in 4 years. And at some point, we're going to have to reset the economic system, the currency system. We're going to have to figure out whether we want to have sound monetary policies or not. I would recommend sound monetary policies because if you look throughout history that when governments create money out of nothing, you know, fiat currency, eventually that money returns to its intrinsic value, which is zero. And so, you know, our dollar still works because most of us still believe in it. Most of us still are willing to accept dollars for payment for our wages, for our work. But, you know, at some point, you know, and I don't know if we need to go back. I don't think we need to go back to a gold or silver standard. I don't think most of us want to carry coinage around in our pockets and stuff. And with the population of this country and the entire earth, I don't think you could do a gold standard or a silver standard. You know, some people have proposed the cryptocurrencies, that we have something else to store our wealth that retains its value better than the dollar. But, you know, these are highly complex social issues that have been going on for at least a century. And, it, you know, we need to do some scholarship. We need to do some papers and talk with each other. You know, what kind of world do we want to live in? I'd like a world of peace and prosperity and liberty and justice for all, not just business as usual. So
at the end of the day, when this election is over, how will you gauge this as being successful for you?
If our party maintains major party status, that's a success for me. You know, that's my biggest concern is that the Libertarians party was formed in 1971. And, you know, after Gary Johnson got us major party status, we have a chance to do something in Iowa that hasn't done. And I think Jake Porter said it's been almost 100 years since there's been another major party that maintained its status. So that's my main concern, because I would hate to see all of the hard work that everybody's done sort of be pushed aside and we go back to being a non-party organization without the ability to have a primary election, without the ability to have nominating conventions for open vacancies in the legislature. So that's my main concern.
Brian Jack Holder, Libertarian candidate for the 3rd District. Thank you.
Thank you, Clay.
Clay Masters in conversation with 3rd District Libertarian candidate Brian Jack Holder. Now, you can listen to other conversations Iowa Public Radio has had with candidates at our website, iowapublicradio.org. Reminder once again that this evening, Republican U.S. Senator from Nebraska, Ben Sasse, will be giving a free lecture. That's at 5 p.m. at the University of Iowa's Memorial Union, beginning at 5 p.m. I'll be moderating a Q&A with Senator Sasse following his remarks, and we'll be broadcasting highlights of that event tomorrow here on River to River. Ben Sasse has a new book out called The Vanishing American Adult, Our Coming-of-Age Crisis and How to Rebuild a Culture of Self-Reliance. Ben Sasse this evening appearing in Iowa City, and we'll broadcast highlights from that event tomorrow on this program. We have a few extra seconds. Let me mention Monday on this program, my guest will be Nicholas Johnson, former FCC commissioner, also an Iowan. He lives in Iowa City, author of numerous books, including How to Talk Back to Your Television Set, Test Pattern for Living, and his new book, Columns of Democracy, in which he looks at democracy and human rights under attack in many countries, also here in the U.S. Nicholas Johnson, my guest on Monday's River to River. And that does it for today's program. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of this program, River to River, available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. We always welcome your comments and questions. You can contact us anytime via email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.